This is ESPN Radio.
Ian Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. Mike Golic Jr. and Chris Canty. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. And guests join us on the Goodyear Hotline. And we've talked a lot today about the news surrounding John Gruden, who resigned as the Las Vegas Raiders head coach after a number of racist, anti-gay, and misogynistic comments made in emails over the course of these 7 to 8 years from 2011 on. For more on that situation and everything surrounding this, we head to the Goodyear Hotline to talk to Bomani Jones, host of The Right Time with Bomani Jones, wherever you get your podcast. Bo, how you doing?
Well, I'm very curious about that, and the first is an interesting way to look at it, because my initial read on this when it all happened was that some reporter had gotten a hold of all these emails and then pulled them out, but it seems very clear that the NFL is still the only people that have all of the emails, which means that somebody up there decided to weaponize this against John Gruden, and I don't have a great handle on what exactly the play was there, because somebody decided John Gruden's got to go. Okay, we don't want John Gruden to go. Well, we're going to say he said D'Amar Smith has these big lips. Oh, we ain't got to quit over that one. Okay, well, now we're going to drop everything else. What do you know? John Gruden's gone. Why? We're going to find out at some point. I just don't know what it is now.
Bo, do we expect that there are going to be any more people that are implicated in this news dump from the investigation that happened with the Washington football team, or is this going to be a one-off?
Well, the NFL might have played themselves. The PA just said that they want all of the emails to be released. Now, of course, the league is not beholden to the desires of the PA. But in this day and age, I don't know who has access, who could do what, who could send what. But keeping that under wraps is going to take a lot of work for them to do. And if they get out, they get out. And it's good luck to just about everybody if that winds up happening. So I don't really know. I know the NFL, unless they want to destroy somebody else, is probably not going to put more out, but there's going to be significant public pressure for them to do so.
Bomani, a lot of this has been public pressure that mounted from the initial release of information, as you mentioned, the comments about D'Amoris Smith in this. But people have also pointed out that this has been John Gruden now losing his job over things that he said, but also in an investigation about a different organization here. Is there any thought of what the end game looks like for anyone inside the Washington football team's building an organization with this investigated still pointed at them?
Well, you know, remember, they had all this stuff going on that I had forgotten. I think their investigation has been resolved. They were fined $10 million. Dan Snyder had to give up day-to-day control for a period of time. And that's going to be, I think, the next question that gets asked is, why do we know this about John Gruden, but we don't actually feel like we know anything of what went on with the Washington football team? Now, I have posited this, and this will be interesting. Now the journalists know to go get it. And a lot of staffs have been decimated over the years just by budget cuts. But there's a newspaper that's owned by a guy that we hear wants an NFL team. And what do you know? That newspaper is based in Washington, D.C. If I were him and I was running a newspaper, I would dedicate some resources toward getting to the bottom of this in the name of the public good.
Bo, spinning this thing forward for the Raiders, how does this news and the resignation of John Gruden impact this potential job opening moving forward?
Now, that's a good question. I don't want to say that it is an unattractive job, but I do feel like coaching jobs are as attractive as the owner happens to be. Now, as a franchise, they are going to be flush with cash really soon. They're going to be able to print money off of that stadium and the fact that people really love the idea of wrapping their Vegas trips around a football game. And Raiders fans, it doesn't matter what city they play in. They all trying to show up, right? He's on there in Vegas. Okay, well, I guess we play in Vegas now. And then they just go and they show up. So they're going to have money to in a way that the franchise has not, because the difference between Mark Davis and most of these owners is he's just not as rich as them. Like, Al Davis was not a baron of industry like these guys are now that own teams. He's a football coach, a strong-armed team gradually year after year after year. So if you think that Mark Davis can support you and get the things you need to win, then this could be a very, very attractive job. I just don't know if I'd have that kind of faith in a man with that haircut.
Kenny Angolik Jr. here on ESPN Radio talking about Monty Jones on the Goodyear Hotline. Bowl cut's hard to trust. I will always concede that. But, Bo, outside of just that one organization, you mentioned the pressure that could mount on the NFL, depending on how this goes with the PA and the people that want to do some digging on this. Even before we get to that point, how much pressure is on the NFL to still go forward and make some sort of statement, knowing the words they've tried to put behind a lot of these causes in the last year, knowing this now requires action?
Well, do they ever feel pressure? And that's what the difficult thing is. The NFL has just long insulated themselves on the idea, we got the thing you want. You want the football. You can get as mad at us as you want. Sunday's going to come around. You're going to be there to get the football. So I don't know how much pressure they're actually going to feel that they feel obligated to answer to it. Where they, I think in a situation like this in 2021, what you got to worry about is internal. Like, it's one thing to sell what you're doing to people outside of the building, but it's harder to sell people on this with you, sell things like this to your employees. Like, that's what we learned during the summer of 2020 with the George Floyd stuff and everything else, was the people who worked in the building were the ones making pushes for changes. When stuff like this gets out, it's because somebody at work gets mad and decides to send it to somebody. That's what I think they need to be looking out for, the pressure from within the building from people that they don't even know they need to be worried about.
Bo, switching gears, going off to basketball, the Brooklyn Nets came out with a statement today about Kyrie Irving and his situation, and they said that essentially they don't want a part-time player in Kyrie, that he's going to be vaccinated and be a full-time participant, or he's going to stay away from the team. Your thoughts on that situation, and ultimately who made the call to release that statement at this time?
I don't think they had any other option. Like, Chris, you tell me if I'm crazy. I can't imagine you being on a team with a dude that's like, no, he just played half the games. And it ain't even the home one. Like, he'll just meet us there. What? Like, this can't be – that's not how these things work. Like, I think that this was an inevitable conclusion. And I actually thought that Josiah had made a mistake if he had, you know, leaned his billionaire weight on the city in order to get the practice facility deemed an office space. I thought that he made a mistake in doing that, because that was giving too much power to a dude that you probably need to have under some measure of control. Like, I don't like talking about grownups like that, but I feel like you understand what I mean. Like, you couldn't have him in a position where he was feeling like he was dictating public policy. That couldn't happen. And so I'm sure that, I don't know, I would not say Kevin Durant did it, but I would be surprised if they did not ask Kevin Durant's opinion about it, and I would be shocked that if they asked Kevin Durant his opinion about it and he said anything other than, I agree with you. My understanding is they all thought that he was just going to go ahead and get the shot. They can't believe that he didn't, because who would do such a thing? And the answer is Kyrie Irving. He would do such a thing.
Kyrie Irving, yes, the one who seems to defy all logic in this situation on a pretty regular basis. Download The Right Time with Bomani Jones wherever you get your podcast. You have seen him all over your TVs and radios today, dispensing great thoughts. Bo, we appreciate the time, man. We'll talk to you soon.
All right, man, you got to take it easy.
Reminder here, the road to the World Series goes through ESPN Radio. Catch all the postseason action presented by AutoZone on ESPN Radio and the ESPN app. Coming up at 5, Brewers at Braves Game 4, followed by Giants and Dodgers Game 4. Coming up next, though, we mentioned Kyrie Irving and the line drawn in the sand. Are we going to see Kyrie Irving in this 2021-22 season? It doesn't even matter for the Brooklyn Nets. That's next here after this word from Indeed. Now, when you have your own business, you basically have to do everything. That includes hiring, which can become a second job in its own right. That's why there's Indeed, the all-in-one hiring platform that makes it easy to attract, screen, and interview candidates all in one place. With smart tools like Instant Match, you instantly get a list of quality candidates whose resumes on Indeed fit your job description the minute you sponsor a job. Spend less time sifting through resumes and more time saying you're hired. Visit Indeed.com/credit. Back after this, Kenny Angolik Jr. on ESPN Radio.
This is ESPN Radio.
Kenny Angolik Jr. here on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. Mike Golick Jr. and Chris Canny. Our thanks to Bomani Jones for joining us in the last segment, talking about John Gruden's removal from the Las Vegas Raiders. We'll get to some renewed pressure being put on the NFL to see what comes after this. Some logical questions being asked of the league after John Gruden's dismissal. But Chris, we also talked with Bo about what's going on with Kyrie Irving and the Brooklyn Nets. Sean Marks, their GM, came out and said that Kyrie Irving will ultimately not play or practice until he is eligible under the local COVID-19 vaccination mandate in New York that does not allow players in the home team to play inside that arena if they're not vaccinated. This is more of what Sean Marks, the Nets GM, had to say in their press conference today.
Kyrie's made it clear that he has a choice in this matter, and it's ultimately going to be up to him what he decides. You know, we respect the fact that he has a choice and he can make his own and right to choose. As again, right now, what's best for the organization is the path that we're taking. And I don't want to speak for Kyrie. You know, at the right time, I'm sure he will address his feelings and you know what the path may be for him.
Chris, what does the path look like for him at this point? Because it seems like this is one of those guys that's not going to be bullied, if that's the word you want to use, by the league or anyone else into actually doing this.
Oh, it's simple. I mean, it's either fit in or get out. Like, that's essentially what the organization is saying. And you got to believe, based on the timing of it and the sternness from the statement, that Kevin Durant and James Harden both signed off on this. And I think Sean Marks and Josiah alluded to as much because they said that everybody was involved in making this decision. So you got to know that Kevin Durant, who is essentially here because Kyrie Irving decided that this was his number one choice in free agency a couple of years ago, like Kevin Durant is saying, this is what it's going to be for this team. We had a lot of distractions that we had to deal with last year. A ton of injuries derailed our season. We didn't accomplish our ultimate goal. This year is going to be different. And that starts with prioritizing what we're trying to accomplish, and you taking this anti-vax stance flies in the face of that. So to me, this is about the superstar players taking a stand against Kyrie and saying that he needs to get vaccinated to be a part of it. Otherwise, they don't want anything to do with him. Yeah. And I think that's the right approach. If I'm a player in that locker room, I would feel the same way. And I would applaud what the front office and the ownership did in terms of putting that statement out there.
Yeah, Chris, I think that's important to note, right? Like in the chicken of the egg version of this, I don't think Kevin Durant and James Harden came to ownership or came to Sean Marks and said, hey, this is how we want to get down. But they definitely put their stamp on it as this conversation went forward. Because we talked about this in shows before. I didn't know if the Nets necessarily had to do anything because they operate from a position of power. Like, they got more good guys on this team than most everybody else in this league. We saw how that played out last year, but this has to be some sort of admission that in the future they would like to maybe win more than just, or have the opportunity to win more than just one championship. And James Harden, I don't think we can discount what kind of pressure on the organization his comments around media day about, you know, I've never done free agency before, I'm going to keep my options open, what kind of pressure that put on this situation?
No doubt about it. I mean, that looms large in all of this, and Kevin Durant already locked into his contract extension this offseason, so it's a situation where he's looking around and trying to figure out who's going to be around him, what his supporting cast is going to look like moving forward, knowing full well the, you know, the status of Kyrie being up in the air and James Harden openly flirting with free agency. So, yeah, it made sense for the organization to take this stance, but because now it at least clears up the picture for James Harden and Kevin Durant in terms of Kyrie's status, and they can devise a plan about what they're going to do moving forward. But to me, the organization taking this stance, you know, kind of shows that you know, this is going to be the priority, which is competing for championships, and we're not going to entertain this nonsense. And I think that could be the thing that tips James Harden and moves him closer to being able to sign the extension that they got for him on the table.
Kenny Golick Jr. here on ESPN Radio. The Nets could be breaking moves to get themselves the hell away from Kyrie Irving.
Breaking Moves is brought to you by LinkedIn Jobs. Build your winning team today. Go to LinkedIn.com/sports.
Because, Chris, I guess looking at this now, trying to predict what Kyrie Irving is going to do is a fool's errand. Like, I'm not going to waste time trying to figure out that game plan because that would really insinuate that there is a game plan there.
But he doesn't have that many choices, though, Mike. Like, that's the thing. Like, Kyrie doesn't have a whole lot of choices in the matter. Either he's going to get vaccinated and play for the Nets, or he's going to be done in Brooklyn. Like, that seems like that's what it's going to be, because it doesn't feel like they're going to change the local mandates anytime soon. And so the reality is, he's going to either fit in or he's going to be done playing basketball, because he's the one that went on the record and said that he's not going to play for any other franchise if they tried to trade him. So this is what it is for Kyrie Irving. These are his options. Either you're going to play for the Nets and you're going to get vaccinated, or you're not going to play at all.
Oh, I know. I mean, I just have no idea which of those he's going to choose, right? Like, that would require me knowing what Kyrie Irving stands for in this particular case or why this has been such a sticking point for him, and I can't figure that out. I can't figure it out if it means enough to him or if this is going to be like an Andrew Wiggins situation where now all of a sudden when faced with the prospect of losing your money, you go ahead and sign on the dotted line here. Like, I don't know if Kyrie is motivated in the way that other people are, because at a lot of turns and a lot of different junctures prior to this on different subjects, he's shown that he's not necessarily motivated in those same ways.
Well, I will say this, when it comes to relationships, when you feel like you have to give an ultimatum, the relationship is usually over. It feels like that's what's happening right now between the Brooklyn Nets and Kyrie Irving, because they've basically drawn this line in the sand and saying you don't have the option to be a part-time player and to play in the 39 road games that you would be eligible for. This is a situation where you have to be all in or you're out. And for Kyrie Irving, I don't know that he's the kind of guy that's going to be bullied or backed into changing his stance and getting vaccinated. It doesn't feel like there's Andrew Wiggins vibes going on around Kyrie Irving. So, I think this is a stalemate, and it's going to be fascinating to watch this play out. But it's clear that the organization, they don't want to have to deal with the distraction of whether or not Kyrie is going to be with the team, having him in and having him out throughout the course of the season. They want to make it clear about what this team is going to be, the composition of it, the rotations, all of that other stuff, and that's their approach moving forward. And Kyrie not being participant, not getting vaccinated, that's something that they can't deal with.
Yeah, everyone lived a life that's pretty chaotic in the last couple of seasons in sports dictated by the pandemic. Brooklyn also lived one like that based on availability physically, health-wise, for their stars last year. And we talked about why so many teams we thought would take the approach of we don't want to deal with that anymore from a COVID protocol standpoint. I think the same could be said for the Brooklyn Nets of, hey, we lived that last year. We are in no steady rush to go back to a steady diet of never knowing when our stars are going to be out there. Coming up next, we'll get into more on the situation surrounding John Gruden, the Las Vegas Raiders, and the Washington football team.
This is ESPN Radio.
John Gruden out as Las Vegas Raiders head coach.
So let this be a lesson to a lot of people out there. What's done in the dark eventually comes to the light.
He's a bad guy. He's a bad person. I can't call him a racist. I can't call him that, but I know what you use.
ESPN Radio is presented by Progressive Insurance. Progressive makes bundling easy and affordable. Get a multi-policy discount by combining your car, home, motorcycle, commercial auto, and more. All your protection right in one place. Bundle and save at progressive.com. It's Canty and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio. Mike Golic Jr. and Chris Canty. And Chris, we talked about John Gruden resigning as head coach of the Las Vegas Raiders after leaked emails from the NFL's investigation into the Washington football team produced comments from Gruden that spanned racism, misogyny, homophobia, and you name it. He basically hit the bingo card of hate speech against people that could be in and around the NFL, in and around his vicinity. We wonder where this might go, because these came from emails, over 650,000 emails reviewed by NFL league personnel, presented the findings then to Roger Goodell. And so we talked about Monty Jones earlier. You could reason that these leaks came from the NFL, who's in possession of these emails. Some people want more of those out. According to a statement released to Front Office Sports, Lisa Banks and Deborah Katz, who represent about 40 of the plaintiffs in the suit, former Washington football team employees, want those emails released. In a statement released, these two said, quote, "It's truly outrageous that after the NFL's 10-month investigation, including hundreds of witnesses and 650,000 documents related to the longtime culture of harassment and abuse at the Washington football team, that the only person held accountable and losing their job is the coach of the Las Vegas Raiders. If the NFL felt it appropriate to release these offensive emails from John Gruden, which it obtained during its investigation in the Washington football team, it must also release these findings related to the actual target of that investigation. Our clients and the public at large deserve transparency and accountability." And Chris, we talked about the NFLPA putting pressure on the league to release these emails. This is not going to go away. And I think it's a very natural follow-up question of, if you release those, why aren't we getting the rest?
No, I think it's absolutely fair that they would ask that question. But to expect transparency, I just feel like under the circumstances, you're kind of playing yourself, because we knew that the investigation was going to be anything but. The Washington football team were the ones that went and employed Beth Wilkerson to do the investigation. So that flies in the face of any type of independence or any type of avoidance of conflict of interest. Like, this was going to be a situation where the NFL wanted to keep some guardrails on this to keep any information that was insensitive or inflammatory contained and let the NFL decide, you know, whether or not they want to pick and choose what things to make public. Like, this was going to be something where the NFL was going to try to do some damage control, and we saw the fallout for it. We saw the discipline for the Washington football team, a $10 million fine, and then Dan Snyder stepping away from the day-to-day operations of the team. I have a hard time believing that it's going to go much further than that in terms of any employees from the Washington football team being implicated by this news dump.
It's going to continue to draw a side eye, because this honestly is the macro version of what we just saw in the micro with John Gruden and the Raiders, right? This is about a certain group of people believing they are owed the benefit of the doubt, despite overwhelming evidence that that shouldn't be the case, right? Like, in both of these instances, whether you are the NFL looking for the benefit of the doubt in the way that you investigate something like this, or John Gruden in his first apology after it was just, and I say just in quotes because, man, the Lord thought that this is just anything, of the released emails with him using derogatory language about Damaris Smith, the head of the NFLPA, believing that he's owed the benefit of the doubt in that situation in a way that's just not the case, Chris. And so transparency, you're right, is something that everyone has been looking for in these instances and accountability, and are somehow still in short order despite overwhelming evidence.
Yeah, I think that's a perfect world type of thing. Like, in a perfect world, the NFL will release all the findings from the investigation, all the materials, and that way the court of public opinion can have all of that stuff for consumption and they can make their own determinations about who deserves discipline. But that's not what the NFL is going to do. The NFL wants to try to insulate the owners. The owners actually are the ones that hired Roger Goodell, so he works at their behest. So it's one of those situations where, like, the NFL is going to do what it takes, whatever it takes, in order to protect the interest of these individuals that lead these franchises. So I never expected that, you know, we would get the full story from the investigation that Beth Wilkerson did. But I did expect to see some level of discipline that would be levied. And we saw that, earlier this year. So I don't think this is a situation where we're going to get much more than what we've already gotten in terms of the actual the heart of the investigation, which was the Washington football team.
Kenny Angola Jr. here on ESPN Radio. Chris, that's only going to prompt people to, I think, do more digging into this, right? This sort of, again, what got John Gruden in all of this was him saying, listen, I said things about the commissioner. That was basically his version of the apology was, listen, I said bad things about a number of people, and then they went and actually pulled the receipts on that, and it was worse than we could have imagined, and so now he's out of a job in all of this. And you're right, Bomani Jones, who was on with us earlier, basically said it. The NFL knows it's got a product we're all going to keep coming back for. We've demonstrated that time and time again. But what it loses is, all right, the next time something like this happens and you expect anyone to give you the benefit of the doubt, that has got to be erased and gone. People are going to know better than to expect that at this point. And John Gruden is just one part of a whole, right? He's a proxy for larger problems that always exist in systems like this. But for the NFL, you don't accomplish much by just carving out one version of that, one small part of that. Again, just doing the math, a couple of handful of emails and 650,000, I find it hard to believe, based on the sheer volume there, that this was the only thing they found in all this.
Well, here's the thing. It was clear that somebody that had access to the information from the investigation had an agenda when it came to John Gruden, and that's why it feels like he's being singled out. I don't pretend to know the motivation behind it, but it's clear to me that they were going to continue to leak information until John Gruden resigned or until the Vegas Raiders felt the pressure and fired him. But that was one of those things. They had John Gruden in their crosshairs, and they weren't going to quit until he was no longer a part of the game. But as far as the NFL trying to move forward beyond this, I think they're just going to do what they always do, which is duck and cover and try to ride out the storm. Something else will happen in the news cycle, and folks will stop paying attention to this. But the sad part in all of it, Gojo, is some of the attitudes that were expressed by John Gruden in that email. When you start talking about the misogynistic attitudes, the anti-gay positions that he took, the slurs that he used, and then the slurs that were racially insensitive to DeMaurice Smith, like, some of those attitudes are still more pervasive in this game than we actually know. And so I think that's the one thing that the NFL has to be serious about trying to get cleaned up, and, you know, stop using – well, not necessarily stop using, but actually take the words diversity and inclusion seriously, and being able to, you know, employ people in a meaningful way within the organizations and within the league as a whole. I think that has to be the first step to the NFL trying to clean up some of the things that we've seen, some of the attitudes that we've seen expressed from John Gruden and others.
Yeah, Chris, you said it there. That duck and cover prevents progress because it prevents us from ever having to show actions that match the words the NFL are trying to sell people on the way that they view these groups that they claim want. They want them around football. They want people to feel comfortable being fans of football. But as long as we know these attitudes are going on behind the scenes, that's going to be difficult to meaningfully sell to people. So again, lawyers representing 40 former Washington football team employees calling on the NFL to release more info in the aftermath of John Gruden and Bruce Allen's emails that ultimately ended with John Gruden resigning from his role as the Las Vegas Raiders head coach. We'll have plenty more updates on that. Coming up next, though, we will spin it forward and look ahead to what's coming up after us here. More Major League Baseball we'll get you ready for on ESPN Radio after this word from AT&T. Guys, if there are friends and family members you haven't talked to in a while, don't worry. It's never too late to reconnect. Just tell them you were taking a shower, you missed their call. You're going to get back to them here. You can also get some help from AT&T. They're offering deals on the latest smartphones. It's not complicated. Everyone deserves something new. So AT&T is giving new and existing customers their best deals on every smartphone, even the latest ones. Restrictions and exceptions may apply. Visit att.com for details. Back after this, Canty and Golic Jr., ESPN Radio. Road to the World Series goes through ESPN Radio. Catch all the postseason action presented by AutoZone on ESPN Radio and the ESPN app. Coming up, we got Brewers at Braves Game 4, followed by the Giants and the Dodgers in Game 4 of that series. All of that coming up right after us here on Canty and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio. Mike Golic Jr. and Chris Canty. And for more on what's going on in the MLB postseason, we head to the Goodyear Hotline to talk to two of our favorite people, ESPN MLB insider Tim Kirkjian and ESPN MLB Tonight host and MLB play-by-play announcer Carl Ravitch joining us on the Goodyear Hotline. Fellas, how we doing?
We're doing great, guys. How are you?
Hi, Mike. Hi, Chris.
We're doing great. Awesome to talk to both of you guys tonight as we get set for more MLB action on ESPN Radio. I want to start. You guys are going to be on part of the call for the Brewers and the Braves here. And we know for the Braves, certainly some news here about their right fielder, Jorge Soler, testing positive for COVID-19 prior to the game coming up today. So what kind of adjustment has this triggered for this Braves lineup?
Well, they're going to move their defensive alignment around in the outfield. He was their leadoff hitter, and Eric Young, who's their first base coach, said because he's been struggling, it's not like Soler's been tearing the ball apart. He's been struggling, but he said, man, when we moved Soler into the leadoff spot after they acquired him at the trade deadline, we took off. So they were kind of waiting for Soler to take off again. As a result of COVID, he's now down probably for obviously the rest of this series and 10 days into the next series. So they now have Adam Duvall, who's going to play left field, Guillermo Heredia, and then Jock Peterson in right. Peterson's been the guy that, of course, has turned the series around with his pinch-hit home runs, two of those. He was in the starting lineup originally in left field. They move him to right. Duvall was in center. He moves to left, and Heredia is going to be in center. They're a little bit better defensively, and, you know, given the way that Soler has struggled, it's a bit of a push offensively, but when Soler is good, they're a better offensive team, obviously, when he's in the lineup.
Tim, before we get to the nightcap on Tuesday slate, I got to go back to what happened on Monday night with the Red Sox ousting the 100-win Tampa Bay Rays. Are you guys surprised? Because Kike Hernandez says it's not surprising to them, but are you guys surprised that the Red Sox were able to take care of them in the division series?
Well, this is October, and it's filled with surprises every year. But, yes, I thought the Rays were the best team in the American League. I thought they were going to the World Series, but you got to hand it to the Red Sox. There have been a half a dozen times this year, including after getting swept the opening series of the season against the Orioles, where you said this team's in a lot of trouble. And every time they got in trouble, Alex Cora and his resilient group of guys somehow got out of it. We saw it the final Sunday of the season. We saw it a little bit in the wild card game. We saw it against the Rays, and they kept coming back. There's a certain toughness to that Red Sox team that cannot be underestimated.
And I'll add, Chris and Mike, I'm not certain that it is a huge surprise. I thought they were the greatest underachiever last year in baseball. I think their talent level last year, coupled with the fact that there was no manager there, you know, Alex Cora was gone and Ron Renicki was there, They took the year off, and you come back with the guys that they have in that lineup, and you know Sale was coming back, and you have Eovaldi and Eduardo Rodriguez. It's a pretty darn good team. They were terrible last year. They kind of phoned it in, and I thought going into the season they were going to be a lot better. I didn't know they were going to be this good, but I thought they were going to – I was in the mind of Alex Cora. Look, we are a lot better than we were last year when I was at home watching games from my couch. So I wouldn't say that I'm surprised as many are. I think they were gross underachievers last year.
And he's got a much better view for this season, there is no doubt. As we're talking on the Goodyear Hotline to Tim Kirkchen and Carl Ravitch ahead of our coverage on ESPN Radio of Brewers Braves coming up first. And then we do have the nightcap, game four between the Giants and the Dodgers. And Tim, looking at this game, Walker Buehler is going to get the ball on short rest for the Dodgers with their season on the line. What do they need to do to extend this series?
Well, they're going to need Walker Buehler to be really good, and that's a big ask, even though he's young and strong. Short rest is a different animal, even in October. But what they have to do, obviously, is score a few more runs. They've been shut out twice in three games. You know, they led the league in runs scored, and they're a really good offensive team. But you really break down where they scored all their runs, they were pretty much a hit-or-miss team. They'd get 12 or 14 on you, and then the next two games get two or three. So they can be pitched to much more, and it shows again how much they've missed Max Muncy in the middle of that order, 35-homer guy, walk guy, incredibly patient. The Dodgers got their work cut out for them against a good pitcher tonight, and the Giants are really playing with some faith right now.
And Tim, to get back on the Giants, I mean, how are they doing this? I mean, it seems like a short time ago you were talking about a team that was losing, you know, 90 games, and now Gabe Kepler and Farhan Saidi have this team up 2-1 in the division series against a team that won 100 games and won the World Championship last year in the L.A. Dodgers. How exactly did the Giants get to this point?
Well, they swing at strikes, and they swing as hard as they can at strikes in case they hit the ball out of the ballpark, which they've done a great deal this year. And their pitching's been awfully, awfully good. And it's an amazing story because I can't even find a comparable for a team that was supposed to win, you know, 75 games this year, winning 107 and doing it without adding like a star player who you could just point to and say, here's the reason why. Well, all those veteran guys bought into the plan, into the program, and it sounds corny, but they all played together, and this has been a phenomenal season that the Giants have put together.
A phenomenal season that they're going to try and cap with a win tonight. Again, you got this all coming up on ESPN Radio and the ESPN app. Brewers at Braves, where you're going to hear Tim Kirkchen and Carl Ravitch, followed by Giants and Dodgers, both game fours in that one. Tim, Carl, we appreciate you guys giving us some time. Have a great call, and we'll talk to you soon, okay?
All right, fellas, thank you.
See you guys.
Again, you can check them out as a part of that call. Brewers at Braves, game four, coming up at 5 right here on ESPN Radio and on the ESPN app here. Also saw news, Chandler Jones, star pass rusher for the Cardinals, placed on the reserve COVID-19 list. Lots more on that and Major League Baseball next here on ESPN Radio. We have that coming up in a minute. I'm sorry here, we had extra time on there and I missed time to jump on this. So Chris can react to that one for a quick second, but Chandler Jones, unfortunately, now on the COVID-19 reserve list.
Yeah, that's a big blow for that Cardinals defense, but that group was flying around on Sunday against the 49ers. I mean, you talk about what they were able to do and being able to get key stops. I want to say they had four stops on fourth down in that game, including one on the goal line. So just that defense, what they've been able to do, really, really impressive. Chandler Jones being out of that lineup, that's a huge hit for the Cards.
Huge hit for the Cardinals. Again, Chandler Jones, one of the league leaders in sacks, on the COVID-19 list with a positive test there. But we'll have plenty more time to get to news on the NFL as we approach the midway point of this week. Catch everything coming up next here on ESPN Radio. We've got Brewers at Braves game 4, followed by Giants and Dodgers game 4. Stick around, coming up next.